We are pleased to have as our speaker this morning Dr. Dennis D. Nicola. Dr. D. Nicola completed his DVM and PhD degrees at Purdue University. He has served as an educator for over 20 years, an educator of veterinary students, pathology residents, and veterinary technicians relative to clinical and anatomic pathology. Dr. D. Nicola has authored or co-authored more than 150 publications and has spoken at more than 200 national and international meetings. Currently, Dr. D. Nicola is the chief veterinary educator for IDEX Laboratories. Let's welcome Dr. D. Nicola.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity coming out. As a pathologist, we like hearing ourselves talk a lot, so I hope I don't traumatize you too much. One thing we forgot to mention, that if you hunt for the proceedings for these two sessions, or actually for any of my four sessions, you won't find them, and I'm not sure why I didn't send them, but the way to do that is to go to the IDEX booth and have your card swiped and say you want notes from D. Nicola, and we'll send them out to you, okay? Make sure you do that. This morning I'm going to talk about hematology, and I'm going to emphasize why we look at the blood film, and with a few examples in red cells in the second hour, we're going to talk about how it helps us characterize that anemic patient. This is an incredibly exciting time, at least for a veterinary clinical pathologist, because of what we've done or how we've advanced in our in-house capabilities in hematology. But the biggest problem I see is people are abusing the technology that we have. And it's very, very depressing finding out how many people actually look at the blood films. You know, when I ask there may be 10% of the hands go up in an audience, yes, we look at it regularly, and then I ask, keep your hands up, and, well, how many of you are looking at all the CBCs, and immediately the vast majority of those hands go down, and one or two hands stay up, but shakingly, like they're really lying to me. They know, I'll tell them I'm looking at it, but I'm really not. There's a huge, huge, huge amount of material and information on that blood film. And let me emphasize how much information is there. When we train clinical pathology residents, in my three-year program when I was at Purdue University, every week I would give the residents an unidentified blood film. I mean, I gave them absolutely no information. I didn't tell them what species it came from, what clinical signs. It could have been human, could have been primate, could have been anything. But I expected them to look at that blood film and give me back a report. And a report would include, in the red cell side, characterization of, you know, is the density low or high? Is there an anemia? And is it mild, moderate, or marked? If it is anemic, is there any evidence of regeneration based on morphology? If there are morphologic changes suggesting the mechanism of causing that anemia, and then a list of other tests that would help characterize that anemia a little better. In white cells, I expect them to give me a white cell count within 5,000 per microliter, a differential without doing a differential, you know, saying things like neutrophilia with a marked left shift and monocytosis, those kind of terms, because the differential really didn't matter that much to me. I wanted to know what the interpretation is. And again, comments on morphology and a list of diagnostic tests that they should do to perform next to characterize a little better. With platelets, platelet counts within 20,000 is what I was expecting them to do. I expect them to talk about morphology and tell me what the bone marrow is doing or not doing. And again, give me a list of other tests to tell me what I should be doing next. And combine all three of those compartments, red cell, white cells, and platelets, into a general summary with an overall interpretation of where we're going to go next. And I gave them 10 minutes to look at the blood film and do a handwritten report for me. you can imagine the first year residents did not perform very well. But the second and third year, it's incredible if you do something on a regular basis, how good you can get. And, you know, by the second and third years, they're now, they're wagering, you know, six packs of beer and cases of this and any kind of vitamin. And they're saying, well, I think the white cell count's 13,532. Oh, no, you dirty slut, it's 13,534. And it got really quite competitive, which helped quite a bit. But there's a tremendous amount of information there. We don't get all the indices and all the fancy numbers, but we do validate all the indices and fancy numbers we get on our hematology analyzers. And this is something you should be aware of, that in the reference labs, at least most of the reference labs, we use that blood film to validate the data we generate off of the analyzers. We need that blood film to make sure that it's performing properly. And this is even on the $100,000 or $120,000 hematology analyzer. It's something we have to worry about and watch very closely. I should constantly emphasize hematology is clearly just one part of the whole picture there, right? It's part of that minimum database, including clinical chemistries, urinalysis and potentially T4s in the older dogs and cats and EKGs, et cetera. But it's part of that minimum database from a laboratory standpoint. It's not a standalone type test. The advanced automated systems are targeting to perform like the reference laboratory analyzes. And right now we have that capability. You have that capability, which amazes me that that can even be done in a cost-effective manner, that you can generate the lab reports similar to what we can generate out of the reference lab. But you have one big advantage in the fact that you're dealing with a fresh sample every single time. The fresher, the better when it comes to hematology. Things change. Red cells swell over time. Within a 24-hour period, the MCV could go up anywhere from 5 to 10 femtoliters increase in size sometimes, depending on how much you fill that tube. And I know everybody here fills the EDTA tubes properly, right? You put the right volume in there. No, you don't. That was very disappointing to me when I joined IDEX and was in the reference lab, because I saw all these tubes in the rack and they're all one-third to a half full. And you know, back at the university, I could just call the student down and whack them aside of the head and say, get another sample. IDEX didn't like when I called people up and said, that's a bad sample, send another one. That wasn't a good business building type communication, so they had to teach me how to talk to the veterinarian. But we see a lot of changes with time. That's why I recommend people, if they use a reference lab, send in a freshly made blood film along with your sample, so that the technicians, they may not use your blood film if they have to do a manual differential, but they have that fresh sample to look at red cell, white cell, and platelet morphology, which changes with time. So that fresher, the better sample, for sure. Well, and again, obviously, the answer to the question, should you use the blood film based on that prelude, is clearly, absolutely yes. And it's for all instruments. Don't forget that. For the low-end instruments like the IDEX Vet AutoRead, or if you're doing manual methods, the impedance analyzers. For the high-end analyzers, now that we have laser flow cytometry in the practices, there are two companies that are producing them now. And then the instruments we use in the reference labs. The high-end and the low-end instruments have to have that blood film evaluation. And I mentioned already what we're going to do with it. We're going to both validate the data, and we're going to do the morphologic evaluation that the analyzers can't do, right? Hey, it always starts here with that blood film, and I'll probably mess this up, I'm sure. Cool, started. So the starting point is being able to make a well-made blood film. Can everybody in here feel confident that they can make a really good smear? And that's good. Think back to veterinary school the first time you made that blood film. At Purdue, I would, in the second year of students, I would give each student an entire box of slides because they could not leave the lab until they made at least one good blood film. And then there's a year and a half that I don't see them again until the senior year, and they come through rotations in the lab. There's another box, because they didn't make a blood film since that last time. And if you haven't made one, you're probably going to go through a few glass slides before you do it. But you have to have a well-made smear, because that is critical for the analysis. If you don't, if you make that slide and you do it too fast, you end up with a really thick slide, and all the cells are distributed towards the body of the smear, where we really can't evaluate morphology very well at all. If you make it too slow, all the leukocytes are out at the feathered edge, so you can't determine what the leukocyte distribution is. Try that sometime if you have a good leukocytosis. Try making it at different speeds, and you'll see, if you actually do a manual differential, you'll have dramatic differences in your differentials, enough to be different from an interpretation standpoint as well. But we need to be able to make that blood film correctly. Now, if I can get off that. Okay, how are we going to do this? And usually I get a lot of kickback from veterinarians, when I speak to technicians, they give me two reasons why the veterinarians don't like them to, or why they don't look at blood films, why the technicians don't look at blood films. And they say there are two big reasons. One, they don't have the confidence in doing it because, you know, their short training in their tech programs didn't really build them up to have a lot of confidence. And then two, their fears are that the veterinarians don't want them to spend 5, 10 and so minutes on each blood film. And I'm telling them they should look at every single blood film. It doesn't have to be a long evaluation at all. And in fact, in those healthy patients, maybe those patients you're doing a pre-anesthetic profile on a generally or a healthy animal, a pre-surgical screen, before a spay, or you're doing an adult animal, part of your minimum database on a wellness check, and the animal's clinically normal. In most of those clinically normal animals, we don't find significant abnormalities. The amount of time you spend on the blood film, now that we've got your analyzers that can give you a 5-part leukocyte differential, is really, really quite minimal. You're just going to be scanning that because you're looking for really major things. Are there big red cell changes, white cell changes, platelet changes? Is the distribution appropriate? All of that can be done in less than a minute's time. In the worst possible case scenario, an animal that has a severe inflammatory process or a lot of red cell changes or leukocytes that you can't even identify, I tell technicians don't spend any more than 3 minutes maximum looking at that blood film. It's one of those things, the same way I teach cytology, I tell the students to not spend more than a total of 10 minutes on a particular case. Now, they may have gotten 4 aspirates, but they can spend only 10 minutes on that case because the longer you look at those slides, the more you see that isn't there. In the cytologies, things become malignant. You start seeing infectious agents. In the case of a blood film, all of a sudden you see a spherocyte. Oh, there's another spherocyte. It's an immune-mediated hemolytic anemia. And you forgot that it took you 20 fields to find 2. You start seeing, a schistocyte. Well, that's a fragmentation. Maybe it's DIC or pre-DIC. You start over-interpreting the sample real quickly. We want the morphologic changes that we look for, whether it's red cell, white cell, or platelet, are really blatant things. They should hit us in the head. We should see it immediately, even at a low magnification, at 40x. We're going to spend a very, very short time way out at the feathered edge. What's out at the feathered edge that we're going to be looking for? Larger cells. Anything else? Platelets, if they're clumped, for sure. And things like microfilaria and stuff like that. So that's what I'm going to be looking for out here. I'm going to spend a maximum of 10 seconds at a 10x objective field of view, and I'm going to scan the entire feathered edge. And I'm going to be looking for those things that, again, smack me in the head that are abnormal. I can recognize platelet clumps. I can see microfilaria. I can see that large atypical mononuclear cell that may be that rare cell in a lymphoma case that's there, or the mast cell that's in circulation. And then after I finish that, I'm going to go down to the body of the smear. This is the place where all the cells are piled up on top of each other. All the cells are touching one another. The leukocytes aren't spread out well, so it's hard to differentiate between a neutrophil and a monocyte, or a monocyte and a lymphocyte. You can't do a good even cell distribution characterization. You can't look at red cell morphology. Why am I going to spend any time with the body of this mare? What's out there that I'm going to look at? I'm going to do it in the same amount of time. I'm going to scan this body of the smear within 10 seconds at 10x magnification. So it's got to be something pretty big. What's that? Microflurry? We can see some down there, especially at the point of application. That's possible. You may even see clumps of white cells or platelets down near, way, way down here at the point of application. But the primary thing I'm going to look for is characterizing the red cell association. Is there agglutination? Is there rouleau? Because I want to be able to characterize if there's agglutination. If there is agglutination, I can pretty much guarantee that no matter what analyzer I'm using, I'm not going to probably get the right red cell count off of that thing. Because all of the systems have limits in their apertures as far as how big of a particle they're going to count or characterize. So if there's any clumping at all, whether it's white cells or red cells, and I see that quickly on a blood film, I'm going to be cautious in interpreting that. Well, then we're going to spend the majority of the time here at the monolayer. This is where less than 50% of the red cells are touching one another. And this is where the white cells are spread out nicely, so we should be able to characterize them very easily, look for things like morphologic changes and toxicity, etc., in the white cells. I'm going to do all my estimates of white cell counts, red cell density, platelet counts in this area of the slide. And I'm going to start at that 10x magnification because I want to see first if I get a nice even distribution of the leukocytes. If I see mostly lymphocytes in this area of the slide, and then I start seeing a mixture of leukocytes, I'm immediately concerned that I'm not going to get an even distribution of leukocytes and my differential is going to be off. If I have to do a manual differential, it's going to be off. And if I have to rely on my automated analyzer, I'm going to doubt that differential as well, because that's suggesting this clumping of leukocytes. The next thing I want to do is I'd like to go somewhere between that 10x and the 100x objective. Everybody jumps immediately to that 100x objective. Stay as far away from that 100x objective as you can and try to look at the forest, not the tree. And I'm afraid most of your scopes are manned with something like a 4x, 10x, 40x, and 100x objective. That's kind of the standard student scope and scopes we find in most practices. The objective that works the best is a 20x objective, which I bet none of you have. Does anybody have a 20x objective on this scope? Yeah, that's not going to happen. I do the vast majority of my hematology and cytology readings at 10 and 20x. The only reason I use oil is because I have shares in that company that makes the immersion oil, and I want to make sure it gets used. And I like to see things really close that I saw far away. I'm getting older, so I need that closeness sometime. What you can do if you don't have a 20x is you can use your 40x objective. It's a little too close for my comfort, but it's better than being at 100x right away. To use it, though, you need a cover slip on the slide because the refractive index requirements of that objective require the interface there of a cover slip. So how to get around that is with your stained and dried blood film, just put a drop of immersion oil and a cover slip just sitting on top of that, and now your 40X will give you a nice sharp image. If it's not giving you a sharp image, it needs to be cleaned. But that's a good objective because at that objective, you can see and differentiate neutrophil, monocyte, lymphocyte, eosinophil, basophil. You can see all the red cell morphologic changes of significance. You may not be able to find mycoplasma organisms in that cat or dog. You may not be able to find Babesia gibsoni, some of the infectious agents. So you're going to have to use the oil magnification at some point here. But the most of the evaluation we want to do is we want to look at the forest, not the tree, and get the general sense of what's going on there. Okay, how are we going to do this? Let's walk through the process. The red cells, how are we going to validate the data? This is not rocket science. I'll show you two fields of view. You tell me which one is the anemic one. Not hard, is it? I'm in the same monolayer area, but if the density is really low, that means there's probably a decreased red cell mass. So if I got a hematocrit from my analyzer that said I had a 15 or 10 hematocrit, that matches that very nicely. But what if my analyzer gave me a result of 20 and I saw a normal density of red cells? That should send up the Kmar blue light flashing light there and say, hey, there's something wrong. Either you're looking at the wrong blood film because you didn't label it properly in your own little in-house lab, or there's something wrong with that sample. Maybe there's clumping of red blood cells and it's not being counted properly by the analyzer. Remember I said if there's clumping of cells, they're not going to be counted. The only other option is there's something wrong with your analyzer and you need to do some QA, QC on it and maybe contact the manufacturer to see about maintenance or repair for the unit itself. But that took a couple of seconds to recognize. That's all I need to do there. Agglutination can be seen in a lot of different ways. If it's really, really gross, this is just a puddle of EDTA anticoagulated blood on a glass slide. You can see the edges of the side on this side and this side. And not only can I say it's anemic because there's not much red cell mass there, but I can say it's agglutinating because of the clumping going on, and there's icterus because of the yellow plasma. This is dog blood, not horse blood. And I'm going to suggest really quickly that it's probably an immune-mediated process. Microscopically, really gross agglutination will be something where you'll see these large three-dimensional balls of cells. But many of our cases where there's true agglutination only have small groups of cells, three, four, five in a group. And oftentimes, they're misdiagnosed or misidentified, and they're identified as, oh, I thought I had a picture there, but I don't. So, back. They have to be differentiated from rouleau. Marked rouleau can look like agglutination. So we have to do some the procedures in the laboratory to differentiate those two. At this level, this is pretty blatant. This is pretty good agglutination. But the technicians in the lab are probably going to do a follow-up test, a saline agglutination test, to characterize that to make sure that it really is there in general. But if it's there, I know my red cell counts are not going to be right. And you probably have seen this, even if you used a reference lab where there was marked agglutination, and you paid the $30 for the CBC, and all you got back was a manual packed cell volume and a hemoglobin concentration. That's about all we can do with that. What the analyzers do, they analyze the cells they do see. So the cells that aren't clumped, you'll get an accurate MCV, an MCHC, hemoglobin concentration, and hematocrit, but it's missing a large population of cells if they're clumping. You can always validate it if you have questions on that. You know, is it the sample? Is it, did I label it wrong? Or is it the instrument? You've got a very, very powerful tool in your practice, and that's that microhematocrit centrifuge. I'm sure none of you have ever calibrated it in the last 20 years because we can get away with tremendous amounts of veterinary medicine. Back in the late 60s, early 70s, there was even a publication on a farm animal basis where you can tape the clayed hematocrit tube filled with blood to a blade of an engine fan and run it for 3 minutes, and then you get your packed cell volume off of it. It's not, you don't have to have really quite sophisticated instruments, but that's a powerful tool for you, that microhematocrit centrifuge. And on top of that, something we don't get now with our analyzers, since we're not doing hematocrits that much anymore, we forget to catch things like icterus and hemolysis. That can be rather dramatically important to us in characterizing that process. Is there underlying liver disease? Am I overwhelming the liver because of an intra or extravascular hemolysis? Or is there blatant intravascular hemolysis? It's a lot of information on that crit tube. Actually, characterizing the Buffy coat, you can even do some things with the white cells and reticulocytes. Well, with the analyzers, we, as I said, we give you a lot of data now. And you're starting to see beyond the routine three, the MCV, MCH, and the MCHC, you're starting to pick up things like RDWs, red cell distribution width. And I know I never taught any of the students at Purdue about that, although I knew about it. It was just one of those that, well, this is going to be really hard to get across their minds because they're being trashed with all this other information, minutia, that they're clearly not going to remember it if I told them anyways. Well, now the reference labs are starting to produce it, or the in-house hematology analyzer is starting to produce these data, and there's a lot of questions about what it is. It's a nice objective measure of the variation in red cell size. If you look at a set of blood films in a case of an animal that has a lot of anisocytosis in it, say like a strong regenerative anemia, the RDW goes up rather significantly. It's a very good objective measure of anisocytosis. Does not replace looking at the blood film, but you know, using the profile of the RDW, trying to recognize anisocytosis, using the MCV, MCHC to help characterize that hypochromic anemia from a chronic blood loss, we use those objective morphologic criteria to help characterize the whole patient. Remember, though, there are M's in front of these words. They're mean values. That means you have to have a lot of abnormal cells and very few normal cells before you start seeing it go outside of the reference interval. If you actually trend a lot of these, you'll see things very easier. Question?
Is there a reason why our laser sight and CHC
is usually 30 to 22 years old?
It's the only
thing that ever comes out of the before. Well, on all of
your samples? No, probably
not. Well, that's too high. And I would be on the phone. The question was, there's nobody here from IDEX, so I can say that. My IDEX hematology analyzer sucks, he said. No, he didn't say that. His laser sight is giving him constant, about half his cases, he's got high MCHCs. That's just way too much from a normal population or even an ill population to see that. So there's something that needs to be adjusted. That sounds like a calibration issue on the machine. So I would just get on the phone immediately to do that. Okay, reticulocyte counts. We know reticulocyte counts are clearly the most objective measure of regeneration, right? Well, even that, and we do have analyzers, both the laser sight, the flow cytometer from IDEX, and the Foresight, the flow cytometer out of Oxford Technologies in Connecticut, give you a reticulocyte count in every dog CBC. And I don't know, I was going to check and I forgot to. This year they're supposed to also have a reticulocyte count on every cat CBC, Foresight is supposed to have. And you say, well, why would you do that except for the anemic patients? Because we see some reticulocytosis in compensated hemolytic anemia that if we didn't recognize that, and if we didn't look at the blood film, which I know is not happening in practice, we would not recognize the features of regeneration. But even when we get the data, we have to validate it. And we validate it very simply by looking at a blood film. We're going to look for these polychromatophils. Remember what those reticulocytes, the young, immature red blood cells, if we look at a regular stain, routine stain slide, they should stain kind of pale bluish. If they're precipitated with new methylene blue, the RNA is precipitated out and has that aggregate material. Well, what we're going to do is, since the normal population, and we've looked at the normal over and over and over again in those clinically normal animals, so I'm using that to imprint what normal is so that when I recognize or when I see abnormal, I'll recognize it very quickly. So here's the normal patient on the side. Polychromasia is a rare event in the dog. And if I had a reticulocytosis, all I have to do is recognize that there are plenty of polychromatophils in there. So again, in a second or two, I validated my reticulocyte count. You have to go through that process. And then morphology. I'm going to talk about morphology and red cells the next hour, but there's like a three-step process. The first is to be able to recognize that something is abnormal, right? If we don't start there, we're dead in the water. And again, if you look at normal on a regular basis, the abnormal will be very striking to you because we're not talking about a certain abnormality, one in every three fields. We're talking about 3, 5, 10, 20 of those abnormal cells minimum in every field of view at that 100x objective field of view. So we should be able to find that very, very quickly. The second step is to recognize what they're called. Are they acanthocytes or schistocytes or spherocytes? And that's that multiple choice quiz in second year of vet school, and you forgot all about it. And then the third part is to remember what the devil those names mean. and what it tells you. And we'll talk a little bit about that the next hour. Clearly, from a morphology standpoint, we do not have the technology yet. I will not be surprised within the next 5 to 10 years we don't have that technology, because we're doing some pretty phenomenal things with laser flow cytometry now. But we can't identify these infectious agents. And if you're in an endemic area of one of them or something, you need to see that. You can't just blatantly accept, well, there are spherocytes and immune-mediated hemolytic. There could be an underlying mycoplasma infection in that animal. You need to do that, because the treatment's going to obviously vary dramatically. What about the white cells? Well, again, we have to validate the white cell count. That's the starting point. And what I tell technicians to do is I tell them to make a series of blood films from animals that they know what the white cell counts are. So make a blood film that has a 2, 5, 10, 15, 20, you pick the numbers, and go up to about 50,000, maybe a little more. Really beyond that 50 or 60,000 per microliter counts, our ability to estimate accurately diminishes dramatically. So a 100,000 cell count looks a lot like the blood film, like a 200 cell count. We can't distinguish those very well at all. But now I've got a map here, a ruler, to compare my patient, my unknown, with. So all I need to do is to look at that unknown, and it's kind of like a Sesame Street, which one of these boxes belongs with the other. I mean, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 cells, leukocytes, in that field of view. This one's got many more than 7. This one only has 4. This one has this one right there, actually, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So my guess would be it's near that 25,000. I don't care if it's 20,000 or 30,000. I just want to know, is it in that range? Because I'm going to be comparing it to my reference analyzer. So if my reference analyzer gave me back a 24,000 white cell count, I'm done. And you'll be amazed if the technician looks at those slides religiously with a while. It takes very, very little time before they now can estimate the counts without looking at those referral slides. But you have those referral slides to train the next technician, and you can always go back to it to validate. What about this sample? This one has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 leukocytes and a nucleated red blood cell. And the hematology analyzer gave a white cell count of 2,000. You immediately say, there's that blue light special flashing again. This doesn't make any sense. It doesn't match up with what my analyzer is saying. And if you notice how the cells are kind of grouped, there was a lot of leukocyte clumping in this animal. And the leukocytes that are clumped are not going to be counted, just like the clumped red cells. And don't forget that other cells, not just platelets, clump. But it takes very little time. That would be a low magnification observation, because you'll see the clusters of cells on the smear. I'm not going to blame the analyzer. Leukocyte distribution, this is important, because we're going to rely on that distribution in characterizing all the different cells. We want to characterize the cells because it's essential for us to interpret it. We can't just use a total white cell count and say, oh, it's infection, oh, it's allergic, oh, it's lymphocytic inflammation. We can't do that. We need to have all the different cell types in there to characterize that leukogram. So if your analyzer doesn't do a full five-part differential, or at least the four-part differential, neutrophil, lymphocytes, monocytes, and eosinophils, I don't think anybody can really count basophils accurately. But if you can at least get that four-part differential in there, that's what you need. And if your analyzer doesn't do that, then you're going to have to do a manual differential. There's no way of getting around that. But we use the patterns there to interpret different types of inflammation or different stages of inflammation. We use, and notice one thing here, the band neutrophil that none of our hematology analyzers right now can identify you becomes a very important cell type to help characterize that leukogram. So we're going to have to look at that blood film. Just differentiating things like inflammation from glucocorticoids and epinephrine, all of them have a neutrophilia. So you can't just say a mild to moderate neutrophilia means inflammation. With glucocorticoids alone, you can have neutrophil counts to 30,000 to 40,000. Most of the time it's in the high teens, low 20s, but he can go all the way up to 30,000 and higher. So we need to know, well, what are the lymphocytes doing? Are they dramatically decreased, suggesting a glucocorticoid response? Is there no left shift? Is there a left shift? All of those questions have to be answered to interpret it properly. But it starts with just getting the leukocyte distribution properly. Now, let me ask you a question. Think about the answer here. We don't have polling devices, so I can't ask you to answer it. But if I had a sample that I knew that 75% of the leukocytes were neutrophils, and I did a 100-cell manual differential, and I made a perfect blood film to do that on, so the slide that's impossible to make, I made. Actually, the technician probably made it, because I couldn't. And I passed that slide around to everybody in the room here, and everybody did a 100-cell differential. What range do you think we should see or could accept for an answer? Is it going to be anywhere as tight as 74 to 76, right around what it is in there? Or is it going to be as wide as 65 to 84%? The answer is mathematically determined. That 100-cell differential is very, very imprecise. And the answer is actually 65 to 84. That's really wide. You have to be pretty forgiving for that 100-cell differential. If you increase the numbers of cells you count, you increase the precision and you decrease that range that's possible. But even counting 1,000 cells, I've got a range of 72 to 78. I think from that alone, you can start seeing that when we start using things like flow cytometers and impedance counters to count thousands and thousands and thousands of leukocytes, if those analyzers can properly bucket the cells into different categories, those differentials are going to be more powerful, more accurate than any manual differential you could ever perform. The key there is that the analyzer is bucketing things properly. So the point I'm saying, just like I trained the residents, if they ever did a manual differential, I took points off of their score, because I did not want them to get into the habit of that. You know, I can look around the room and I can tell how many white-haired people there are pretty quick, what the percentage is, how light brown hair for women, and what color shirt you're wearing. It's not rocket science, and I don't have to do all the counts to make that. I can make a quick estimate. It's very imprecise doing that manual count. White cell morphology, obviously we need to do that because we can't get that right now. But I'll tell you that the Advir 120 and the Advir 220 hematology analyzers that are used in some academic settings and some reference labs with fresh samples can identify immature neutrophils. And it's based on their pattern off of flow cytometry. So you can guarantee that we're looking into that, and I've got a group in Germany right now working with the IDEX laser site doing exactly that, trying to validate the process of being able to recognize immature neutrophils. That will be powerful to the veterinarian because that's a key cell to identify inflammation and differentiate it from other things. The bad part is it's going to be one more reason for you not to look at the blood film. So I'm totally torn on this idea. I want it to happen, but I don't want it to happen. Toxicity is another thing that we can actually do with fresh samples with flow cytometry. And both left shifts and toxicity give us an insight into both the severity and we can use that indication of how is it decreasing in amount or increasing in amount, what's the progression or regression of the inflammatory process. Both very critical and important points for either recognizing there's inflammation there at all or recognizing how severe the inflammatory process is itself. And then there's the abnormal cells. We haven't trained the analyzers to perform very well in recognizing abnormal cells because they're using basically the same principles that we use when we look through the microscope. The optical units of the laser flow cytometer is now looking at it and collecting data just like we do when we look in the slide. So when it comes back to a large number of large, round, immature-appearing, blast-like cells that you think are leukemia, The analyzer is not going to do a real good job with that, other than the fact that it's going to give you a big flag and say, I don't know what the devil these are. I think these are this group, but I'm not sure. So they give you a flag, just like the big units do in the hematology labs. So this is one you're going to have to look at the blood film, and maybe you don't recognize it either, so you put your report, I'm seeing a lot of large, round, immature, blast-like cells that I think is a leukemia. I don't know what cell types they are. You're going to send that into a cytologist or send it into the reference lab to run a complete CBC there and have the technicians look at it. And Lois Roth is going to look at it, and she's going to say, well, I see a lot of large, round, immature, blast-like cells that look like leukemia, but I can't tell you what they belong to either. Morphology can only go so far, and we have to use other techniques, other types of enzyme cytochemistry or immunophenotyping to recognize them. But we can recognize these really quickly looking at a blood film. It doesn't take a long time, and spending more time on it is not going to make it any better. You're not going to get all of a sudden, aha, there's the one cell that has the label on it that says it's a neutrophil precursor. It's not going to happen. Platelets. Platelets are critical for us to look at on the blood film to validate our data. Never accept a low platelet count, and I don't care what hematology analyzer you have, never accept a low platelet count from an hematology analyzer without validating it by looking at a blood film. Cats are horrific for us. Their platelets clump when you look at them. Look at the cat, you don't look at the platelets, but they just clump all the time. The way we collect our samples, it's always that fractious animal that you can't do anything with, or it's a real tiny animal, you're having a hard time getting the blood. And because it takes us a while to get the blood sample, platelets are doing what they're supposed to do. They're activated and they're clumping. So we see a lot more problem with that than even the pediatrician MD does looking at their samples. So we need to validate it. And if I look out at the feathered engine, I find all this, and my platelet count came back 10,000 on the machine, obviously I'm not going to interpret that 10,000. You'll be amazed how many times, I was astounded by this just in the first few weeks I was at IDEX reading bone marrows, and the reasons they're turning in bone marrows were because of the thrombocytopenia. So I pull up the CBC, and there's a big comment in there that says, it gave a number, but it's a big comment and said, platelets are clumped, number inaccurate, estimated to be adequate. And do you guys read those comments? It was like three bone marrows in a row 1 week that were like that, and they're doing bone marrow aspirates and core biopsies when it was just clumping of platelets. There was no problem at all. Look at that blood film. That's going to alleviate a lot of problem with you. You can do really good with estimating platelet counts too. We put actually the first optical unit in the veterinary school at Purdue University. I put a Celdyne analyzer in there before everybody else did, and it took me a long time to get our central administration to pay the bucks for it. And after the first month we had it running in our lab, the technicians at our weekly meeting said, well, we don't trust our platelet counts on the machine. We think we can do better just with a manual estimate. And I said, well, for $120,000, I don't think that's true. And all the data from the human literature says it's fine, no problems. It works very, very well. So that ended that meeting. And then the following week's meeting, they came back with me with 25 CBCs where platelet counts were asked for. They did their manual platelet count with the UniPet system. They did their platelet counts estimated looking at the blood film, and they had their hematology analyzer platelet counts. And it was clear that their estimates were much better correlate to the manual counts than our analyzer was. So I said, I guess I believe you, but you know, that's not fair. You guys have a cumulative of 40 years of experience. That's not transportable into the practice world, so let's let that go away. And it ended. And like all the other times, they proved me wrong. Next week's meeting, they came in. They told our work-study student, who was a business major, working at the front desk, barely knew what a microscope was, and a first-year vet tech student that hadn't been through hematology yet. And they They told them what platelets were. They showed them what platelets were. They told them to count 10 fields of view, what a field of view was, what a monolayer was, and just count the number of platelets they see and do the average on 10 fields and do the math and multiply it times 20,000. And they come back with their results. They're better, using the same 25 cases. The results of those two people that had no experience at all were almost perfect in alignment with the manual counts. I said, well, that doesn't make any sense at all. But then, well, you know, these people have no subjectivity in looking at the blood film. They're doing exactly what they're taught. You know, they're looking for that $250 an hour that we pay them. And there's a job. They're told to count so many platelets. So they did exactly what they were told without doing any bias. When I look at a blood film or a cytology prep, sometimes I just kind of tap the stage because I didn't like that field. You know, well, this is a better one over here. That's a better one over there. I think the people with experience tend to be a little more subjective in how they look at it. But you can get really, really good. The residents would be phenomenally good with this if the platelets are distributed well. There's no clumping. Question? Yeah, 10 fields is what I suggest doing just to get a better average. And if there's a lot of variation in that 10, say you've got 8, 9, 7 on one group of fields and you got 15, 25 on the other, I probably wouldn't make the estimate. And I'd just go back and say it's adequate because if there's too much variability there, it should be really quite consistent. Morphology is another one. Have you ever seen the comment that came back from the reference lab that said large platelet scene? And what did you do? You just completely ignored it, right? I bet you did. Large platelets mean something to us, at least in some species. In the cat, it means nothing. Again, for the cat, you look at a cat and platelets get big. It's a very equivocal finding in the cat, but in most other species, mammalian species, excuse me, it is very predictive of an increased rate of production of platelets at the bone marrow level. So if I look at a blood film that has a severe thrombocytopenia down in that 10, 20,000 platelets per microliter range, and the few platelets I see are large, it's not a bone marrow failure cause of that thrombocytopenia. It's probably a peripheral destruction or consumption. So something like an immune-mediated thrombocytopenia or a DIC consumptive type process that's going on. Because the bone marrow is kicking them out, it's just not keeping up with the demand. And many of the ones that you see large platelet forms in circulation when there's no thrombocytopenia actually are from animals with inflammatory disease. Remember, the platelets play a role in coagulation. Coagulation is a role in inflammation. So platelets are consumed in inflammatory disease. However, they're not being overconsumed like a DIC, and the bone marrow can keep up with the demand by increased production. Okay, do you still need the reference lab? And we'll end with this. And the answer there is absolutely yes as well, for a few reasons. One, I still do some reference lab work, and they pay part of my salary, so we need to do those. But reality, there's experience there at the reference lab that you're not going to come close to touching. You know, they have a technical staff that's seen many, many more blood films than any of your technical staff. You have the opportunity for pathology review on samples that are turned in there. So you have a huge resource there, and that resource can be very valuable for training, for teaching your own technicians in your practice. When they see something abnormal, send a few of those into the lab and find out if they really are abnormal. Remember, the labs want your business, so you know, if they don't make any comment and your technician thought you saw acanthocytes or schistocytes, get on the phone, call them up and say, hey, we thought we were seeing red cell morphology. Didn't you read the request form? And then immediately a technician's going to say, I don't want anything to do with this. And they're going to bump it up to a pathologist. I want somebody else to communicate with them. I don't want to be in the middle of this. So now you're going to get a pathology review. But they want your business, so use them to train your other people. And then don't ignore the possibility of using it as a quality assurance program on a regular basis, and that regular basis is going to depend on how many CBCs you do a day, a week, a month. But, you know, every few weeks, send in a CBC with a split sample, run it in-house, and send it out, they're going to be running different methods, so there's going to be differences. The sample is going to be fresh versus maybe 8, 12, 24 hours old, so the sample's a little different. So there will be differences, but they're not going to be wide differences. And after you collect a few data points, you can use an Excel spreadsheet and plot it out and look at the correlation between the two. It should maintain good correlation. Okay, questions? You can see a lot with a blood film. Actually, I'm working on a whole leukophant. I'm going to be famous, I know. I have about 15 letters now without morphing them. I'm just sticking with capitals. I can't do lowercase. Any questions on that? Is it? Yep. Seven or eight? And that's across the board from like a PCV of 10 versus a PCV of 50? No. And if it's a consistent pattern, that's too much of a difference. And do you know what your MCVs are doing? You ran a manual to check. It's just like here. I'd get customer support right on the line. You can send them an FCS file, and they can look historically at the performance of the unit too. We can talk during the break and address that. So they could recalibrate it? Yeah. But it doesn't surprise me that we're going to have... what amazes me that there aren't more problems than they recognize with this type of equipment. The fact that they can have FedEx ship it out and it works is amazing. Because that first cell dye in the analyzer that I had at Purdue... If somebody just kind of walked by and bumped the table, I'd have a technician in for the entire day realigning the laser. So they've advanced technology quite a bit. But this goes for any hematology analyzer or any kind of analyzer you see, if you're picking up a trend in something at all, that's the worst case scenario, and you need to speak with the customer service for any company. Yeah, and she ended up getting a new machine. There is some field calibration that can be done, but because it's so much solid state to it, they can't do that without really taking it apart quite a bit. Well, thank you very much for coming, and I hope you have a good meeting, and may see you a little later.